You are listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
Chapter 32. Cautiously putting his head out of the hole, Ruggum looked around and saw nothing.
"I must examine Luana in the light," he whispered. "I can do nothing for her until I know what injuries she has."
He said a word, and Alsanam reacted quickly, gladly departing the enclosure. Luana was suffering more than ever, and was slow to respond to Ruggum's commands. But she struggled to her feet, out of the hole, and a short distance away before collapsing. The stoic creature allowed the overseer to examine her right wing, and his heart sank. He found two compound breaks in the bones, one where the wing joined the body, and one between the outer joint and the tip. But even worse, bone protruded through both wounds. Birds suffer injuries, Ruggum knew, both in the wild and under Kirin's direction. He knew which injuries are severe and which aren't. Unfortunately, wing fractures are devastating, the victims being deprived of their primary means of locomotion. In the wild, a bird that can't fly is in peril. But the combination of injuries Luana had was particularly devastating. A break at the shoulder is the most painful of all wing injuries, because the wing hangs from the traumatized area. Penetration of bone through the skin permits blood loss and the entry of hostile organisms. If the wounds were not cleansed, improbable here in the woods, they would doubtless become infected. Lastly, even under the best of circumstances, mending time would be long, should sufficient healing occur at all. Ruggum knew how these injuries would be cared for at home, where the clan had the materials and expertise to treat them. But they were very far from home, in human-infested territory, and his concern for all of them grew by the moment.
"How can we help her?" asked Jilin, distraught over Luana's condition.
"Perhaps we should consult the humans," snarled Ruggum.
Getting up from the couch, Nathan was glad his grandfather's attention was focused on Christopher, not him. Nathan brushed past his brother and ran down the stairs, grabbing his red jacket off a hook and pulling it on as he went out the door.
"I took away his shooting and hunting privileges for the season," the grandfather told Christopher. "He wasn't very happy about it."
"It was only a crow," he said.
John Versteeg was sorry and mystified about today's events. It was a day he and Christopher had long looked forward to. It did not go the way he planned. Sitting by the stone fireplace in his leather chair, he searched for something else to say. He knew the boy was in no mood for shooting.
"Would you like me to help you look for the bird?"
After the strange things he'd seen, he half wanted to go into the woods himself to see what he could find.
"No," said Christopher, his head down. "I really don't want to go back there, and I don't think we'd find it anyway."
"How about a little fishing?"
The grandfather knew the boy enjoyed it. Christopher realized that his grandpa also was disappointed.
"Yeah, that sounds okay."
The old man rose, limped across the room, and put an arm around Christopher's shoulder. Tears of frustration began to burn in the boy's eyes, but he wiped them away quickly. He followed his grandfather down the stairs, out the door, and down the grassy incline toward the dock. They gathered their poles and gear and climbed into the small boat. The old man started the motor, then handed the helm over to his grandson. The quiet motor purred behind Christopher as he held the throttle. It was only a rowboat with a small outboard motor, but navigating it was still fun. With his grandpa in front, they toured the mirror-like lake with little conversation. The sky was clear and the sunshine warm, and there wasn't a breath of wind to unsettle the water. It was a scene of unspoiled, uncluttered beauty, not another house or sign of human life anywhere. Arriving at their favorite fishing spot, Christopher shut off the motor, and they dropped lines into the water. Waiting for a bite, Christopher thought about the episode with his brother. He decided that, when they docked, he'd look for the bird again. John Versteeg was thinking about the incident too, wondering what he saw on the first bird and whether his eyes played tricks on him. Christopher's thoughts were interrupted by a faint, as though far away, voice. He couldn't tell whose it was or where it was coming from, and he glanced about and listened. His grandfather, sitting with his back to him, showed no sign of hearing it. At his age, he probably can't, thought Christopher. Rather than say anything and disturb the quiet, he strained more intently to listen. He realized the voice drifting across the still water was his brother's. Looking toward the lodge, Christopher saw the building and could barely see Nathan on the dock. At first, the syllables were muffled, and he couldn't put any words together. But gradually he understood more, and before a breeze came up to obliterate the distant sounds, he thought he had deciphered at least part of a message and tried to make sense of it, but he caught it in bits and pieces.
"I found the bird," was one thing he heard repeatedly, which excited him. "Grandpa, come back," he heard, and "Chris, tiny little man, both birds, next to him."
Rugum and Jilin were so engrossed in Luana that, uncharacteristically, they didn't notice a human quietly approaching. Jilin was the first to see it, a short distance away, garbed in red and staring down at them. Jilin nudged the overseer, who looked up and saw it. In the presence of a human, they had long been taught to remain still. But for Rugum, the disturbing experience with the young girl changed everything, and now he didn't know what to do. He didn't know whether Jilin or even he himself was visible to the immense being. Alarmed and confused, he panicked, fled to the fallen oak, and disappeared inside. But Jilin remained exactly where he was, beside his downed Eilon. During his previous encounter with a human, he had wanted to run, and did when he got the chance. This time, he had no such desire. Looking up at the colossal being, he had no fear. Indeed, he felt a nearly opposite sensation, an intense one, one foreign to Kieran's before the recent appearance of Granums and Volodons. Since the inception of Noan, Kieran's have been resigned to their circumstances. Mistreated by humans, Kieran's chose to avoid them, developed their own societies, cultures, and ways of life throughout the world, and went on about their business. Kieran's experience many feelings humans do: frustration, sorrow, guilt, fear, happiness, and love. Yet for thousands of years, they have seldom had occasion to sense two others, hatred and anger. Luana lay mortally wounded at Jilin's feet, and the party was grievously endangered. Glaring at the towering being, dark eyes smoldering, he was more outraged than any Kieran had been for centuries. He had no idea when a Kieran had last addressed a human. Prior to his recent troubles, he would have been a wholly unlikely candidate for such a role. Yet he had been through more adversity in a brief time than 1,000 Kierans might experience in their lifetimes. All his frustrations came suddenly to the fore, into clear focus, and he was eminently prepared for confrontation. He even remembered his calamar. Furious and not caring whether he was visible, he stared at the human. Just as it was turning away, he projected his voice upward. "Stop!" he commanded. Chapter 33. This time it was a human who ran. Nathan was dumbfounded when he came across them in the woods. A normal-looking bird, an injured one with blood on its wing, and a tiny being examining it. After his grandfather's lecture and Christopher's arrival, he had grabbed his red jacket and sneaked away from the lodge. Deciding to try to find the bird he shot, he headed for the evergreen grove and made the discovery. Awestruck, he observed them and heard words in a foreign tongue. When the small being looked up and stared at him, he became frightened and was turning to run when the cry of "Stop!" froze him in his tracks. "You did this!" shouted the small creature, pointing at the injured raven. "Why? Why has your race always treated us in such a despicable fashion?" "Who are you?" the stunned teenager managed to blurt. "Where do you come from?" Olaman's calamar clasped in his hand, Jilin was amazed he was speaking and understanding English with ease. The dying magician had explained that communication, even with humans, was one function of the calamar. Uncertain how he activated it, Jilin felt a surge of confidence after his first efforts. Aroused and incensed, he was about to assail this human for all past and present transgressions when he began to sense the wonder and fear the enormous being was feeling. Not knowing how he was perceiving this, Jilin's attitude began softening. Nothing would be gained by berating the human, and they desperately needed help. With little to lose, he decided to tell the truth about Kirin's. "Our race has lived on Earth as long as yours," he said in impeccable English. "By our choice, for countless centuries, you've been unaware of our existence. Normally, we have no malice toward you individually. But my Eilon was assaulted by one of your kind." Nathan turned and ran. Astonished, Jilin watched him crashing through the woods until he was out of sight. Then he looked about for Rugum and saw him stepping out of the hole. "You are visible," said the elder, approaching. "And word to the girl a few days ago. The Granum's sting caused a horrible reversal, making you invisible to us and visible to them." "Rugum," said the lad, "take Alsanam and follow the human. We must get help or Lawana will perish." The overseer stopped. He knew far better than his young companion what fate lay in store for Lawana if she received no help. But he deeply distrusted humans. To do what Jilin was proposing went against his upbringing and his own teachings as an elder. Yet it was becoming painfully apparent they might have no alternative.
"I will follow it," said Rugum, "but nothing more. I will be cautious. They might well intend to harm us further."
He climbed aboard Alsanam and they lifted off, then hovered near the treetops so as not to be detected. Soon he spied the human wearing red and directed his raven to a light high in a tree. Shouting loudly over the water, the being was standing on a wooden platform projecting outward from the lake's bank, searching the water's surface and surrounding terrain for other humans. Rugum saw a tiny boat at the other end of the lake. The human on the platform continued calling, repeating sounds Rugum thought, with a basic knowledge of the language, might be names. The being also said it had found both birds and described Jilin. Seeing it carried no weapon, the overseer took off and climbed to a higher altitude, moving north over the lake. Searching water and land, all he could see was the small craft some distance away, two humans in it. He kept his distance and observed them working in the rear of the boat. Then he heard a burring sound, followed by a deep hum, the vessel starting southward toward the building. He flew well above them until they docked, disembarked, and joined the one on the platform. The two smaller ones then sprinted in the direction of Jilin and Luana, the larger one trailing behind. Descending hurriedly through the trees, Rugum touched down next to Luana and slid to the ground, the two young humans bursting onto the scene and stopping a short distance away. "See what I mean?" cried the taller one in red, beaming. "It's right there!" They stared at Jilin, standing next to Luana. "Grandpa, look!" said Nathan, pointing at the Kirin as his grandfather arrived, puffing heavily. "I was right, wasn't I?" "Well, I'll be darned," breathed the old man. "There it is. I saw it on the back of the bird." The boys looked at him askance. "Both birds are here too, Grandpa," said Christopher. Rugum Chamter was so unnerved by the closeness of three humans that again he fled to the hollow tree and hid. Jilin's courage was not diminished, and he would not be deterred. Calamar in hand, he spoke again, this time to an audience of three astounded humans. "Whether you believe it or not, a species of beings like me and Rugum..." He looked toward the place where the elder had been. He wasn't there. For an instant, Jilin lost his nerve. Then, seeming to derive strength from the calamar, he went on, hardly missing a beat. "Our species has existed as long as yours, but we chose to dwell apart from you." He told briefly about Kirin's, their flying, their magic, and the quest his party was on. For Rugum's protection, he didn't mention their invisibility. The boys were enraptured. Then he told how his bird had been injured, and the boys hung their heads. At first, old John Versteeg couldn't fathom any of it, but now he knew his eyes hadn't betrayed him. "But what is the creature? Something supernatural? Extrasensory? Extraterrestrial? Except for its size and feet, it looks like us and is obviously intelligent." Blinking, he removed his glasses and rubbed his eyes. Beads of sweat stood on his forehead, both from the running and the unearthly scene before him. Then, outrageous as it seemed, during Jilin's remarks, the old man began to wonder. "Nathan," he thought, "shot down a raven. The injured bird is lying there, and beside it stands a small being that knows about the shooting and claims to have been on the bird at the time. And it was, because I saw it." "Who's Rugger, or whatever you said?" asked Nathan. "Are you a leprechaun?" asked Christopher. "How come you speak English?" asked Nathan. "There would be much to discuss," said Jilin, "but we haven't time. One of your kind wounded my raven, and we desperately need help." Christopher glared at his older brother. Nathan looked at the ground. "In the past," said Jilin, "your species and mine..." He stopped. Striding toward him was Rugum Chamter. Observing from his hiding place, the elder had easily grasped what was being said, both by Jilin and the humans. The calamar was translating for everyone. Rugum was concerned for Jilin, whom he knew to be visible. "I can do nothing for him from here," he thought, "and little more out there." But he was moved by his young friend's bravery. Jilin was doing something unprecedented. Alone and with visibility he had no control over, he was confronting three of the immense and unpredictable beings. As far as Rugum knew, nothing like it had occurred since the inauguration of Noan. In light of that courage, the elder was ashamed at his own reflex to hide. He decided he must do something to aid his young companion.
"It might not be much, but at least I can stand beside him."
Stepping out of the hole, he strode toward the unparalleled meeting, but kept his eyes down, not wanting to look at the great beings, and followed Jilin's voice.
But it ceased as Rugum neared Luana. The overseer stopped also, uncertain what to do. Going to him, Jilin knew what courage it had taken for him to come out. "I'm here," said the lad in the home dialect. "It inspires me that you are too." The elder stationed himself near Luana. For the second time on the quest, he was in the presence of humans and felt distinctly uncomfortable. He crossed his arms, kept a steady gaze ahead, and waited. The humans were puzzled. The little creature stopped talking to them, took a few steps, and spoke foreign words. But when it turned back to them, they listened with rapt attention. "In the past," Jilin repeated, "your species and mine were friendly. We are in dire need of the cooperation that was once commonplace. We are very far from home and have nowhere else to turn. Our raven, will you help?" John Versteeg was still far from certain what was happening, but took a step forward. Barely able to believe he was talking to a being 1 foot tall, he asked, "May I look at the bird?" "Yes, you may," said Jilin. The old man knelt down and examined the wing. "Does it have other injuries?" "Not that we know of," said Jilin. The old man stood up shakily and wiped his brow with a handkerchief. "This is inconceivable. How can it be happening? Yet somehow it is. I'm carrying on a conversation with a what? A leprechaun? That's the closest I can come to it." It was staggering, and his mind was beginning to whirl, as his concepts of reality and myth and credibility were all at once blurred. He felt his sanity was being challenged. He had been through experiences like this before, many years ago during the war, when everything going on around him seemed bizarre and surreal. When it happened, he had to stop the flurry of thoughts or he might panic. He could stop them by concentrating on a single thing, something recognizable and tangible. And as he looked down, there it was, the wounded raven. Trembling slightly, he knelt and examined the wing a second time, giving himself a few moments to collect his thoughts. It was broken in 2 places. Then he saw something else, something small, the discovery of which calmed him even further because it focused his mind more fully. But identifying what it was somehow made him angry. Trapped in one of the wounds was a small dark object, a pellet of buckshot. Again, he reviewed the facts. The gun being fired, the fallen raven, the miniature being, the pellet of buckshot. The whole thing must somehow be real.
"And my grandson pulled the trigger. There is no other explanation. What do we do next?"
Standing up unsteadily, he glared at Nathan. Then, looking down at Jilin, the old man spoke hoarsely.
"This matter seems to be our responsibility. My grandson shot your bird. We must deal with it the best way we can. A long time ago, I took care of birds when they were hurt. People even brought them to me. I've never treated one with wounds like this, but I can try. I'll have to carry it to the lodge."
He took the handkerchief out of his pocket, then kneeled and was applying it over the injured raven's head when Jilin stopped him.
"Unless it's dead or in shock," said the man, "it'll bite or claw me when I try to handle it. Covering the head will calm it down."
"I'll take care of that," said Jilin. The incredulous humans listened as the Kirin spoke in Kurlace to the raven. Then he looked at the man.
"No need to cover anything. This bird will not resist or harm you in any way."
"Okay," said the old man, shaking his head, willing to accept almost anything at this point.
"We'll give it a try."
He gently picked up the bird. He had never seen one react like this. Despite its wounds, it made no attempt to struggle, and if anything, appeared to be cooperating. He stood up, cradling the large bird in both arms.
Astonished by these unfathomable events, he turned and limped slowly toward the lodge. Jilin followed, and the boys watched. The Kirin moved with a loping gait unlike anything they had ever seen, and they followed him down the path. Rugam Chamtur wasn't happy, but knew that if he was to help Luana, he must go with them. He boarded Al-Sanam, and they lifted off. After a short trek, the unique procession arrived at the door at the end of the lodge. John Versteeg reached out a hand to open it, supporting the raven with the other, then disappeared inside, the screen door banging shut behind him. The loud noise frightened Jilin, still outside, and for the first time during the encounter, he balked. Looking up at the immense, mysterious, alien structure built by humans, it dawned on him what they were getting into. Luana was inside with a human, one of the very ones who had attacked her. Circling overhead, Rugam knew generally where Jilin was, because the human lads stared at him constantly, and the elder sensed what was happening. He, too, was loath to enter a space like this, to a greater degree than Jilin. But their only hope for Luana was to be inside with the humans. Forcing fear and disgust from his mind, he flew down and landed.
"Jilin, lad, where are you?"
he asked from Alsanam's back in the home dialect.
"Touch me!"
For the first time taking their eyes off Jilin, the boys gaped at what appeared to be a raven speaking gibberish. "Here," said Jilin, touching the elder's foot with his hand. With his old comrade nearby, the lad felt better.
"We must go in," said Rugam firmly.
Turning to the boys, Jilin asked them to open the enormous door. Christopher was fascinated, his eyes darting from the raven to the tiny being during their unintelligible conversation. Going to the screen door, he pulled it open. Jilin stepped over the doorstep into the man-made building and was followed by a strutting Al-Sanam, the practical but reluctant Rugam aboard.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
To learn more about Kirin's, visit www.kirinbooks.com.
You have been listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.